children, time to awake from your sleep. Rise to a new day with each your soul to keep. Come, my children, time to awake from your sleep. Rise to a new day with each your soul to keep.
Hello and welcome to the Enlightened Medicine Show with Dr. Valerie Olmsted, the holographic physician. I have got a lot to tell you guys tonight. And let me first start with a couple things. You know, we got to do the business, you know, at the beginning and at the end. So I would like to encourage you all to go to hydrame.com. That's hydrame.com. And please do check out their products. You know, they have the best products. And you guys, you know, you get all kinds of goodies, you know, when you deal with them. So please do go and check that out. It's something that's really going to help you. And, you know, I'm very much into all of the natural stuff, obviously. But part of the problem with a lot of people and with what they're doing in their lives is that they're messing themselves up by kind of not adhering to using the most natural things that they can. And so about the most delicate way that I could say that to you is to kind of point that out, because everything that you do, everything that you use on your body, everything that you put into your body is going to have an effect on the overall health of your body. And that includes the foods that we eat. It includes the toxins or lack thereof that we put on the body. All that stuff has an effect. So I would ask you to please consider Hydrame Organic Skin Nutrition. If you haven't done it yet, please do go check it out. You really owe it to yourself. It's great stuff. And I am a big fan of Hydrame. And they support this show. So you know what I'm saying here? You know, if you want to keep the show going, unless you're planning on digging out your wallets and sending me $5 each every week, I think maybe you ought to, you know, kind of go take a look at Hydrame Skin Nutrition. And so anyway, please do that. Now, I missed this last week because I was in a intensive 8-day writer's workshop retreat. And I got to tell you, folks, I had no idea that writing could be considered an extreme sport. But it was. And I have never written for 8 days solid before. We wrote for like 2 hours, took 10 minutes off, back for 2 hours, took a half an hour for lunch, back for 2 hours, 10 minutes off, back for 2 hours. Like, oh my God. But I am happy to tell you that the Quantum Vortex book is done. Now, it's not completely done. I have to do revisions and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But that will be available on my website, on the quantumvortexexperience.com. Not yet, so don't get all excited. It's going to take me a couple weeks yet. But I am going to have that available. It'll be a downloadable product. At some point, I'll probably go to print. One of the things that I found out is that when you go to a standard publisher, they take 90% of what you have. And since I'm the only person in the world who has this and is doing it this way, not that I'm the only one that has Dr. Bell's equipment, it's more than that. It's what I've done with it and, you know, done the studies and created something with it. I'm not about to give 90% of that away, nor am I going to put it into some kind of a little pigeonhole where people can't get to it. So I've decided the best route to go is ebook. So that's what I'm going to be doing. And you know, at some point I'll also go ahead and do a pre-run of pre-order publishing, you know, to keep the price down for everybody. So I'll let you know when that's ready. Tonight, what I'm going to do is read to you from my book that actually I wrote a couple years ago, but I've decided to release it free. And it is an ebook. It's fully downloadable. There's a new site you go to get that. That's free800, free800.us, as in United States, / choose your doctor home. That's choose your doctor home. And then when you go there, you can read about the book, and then you can click on join list. When you join, you'll be asked if you're the person who sent that. It's a double opt-in. So you'll be, you know, asked to verify that, yes, indeed, you do want that. And then as soon as you verify that, then you will be sent right to the page where you can download the book. Now, the reason I'm doing that is because this is information that everybody really needs. And I don't know why I didn't get it out before now, but I didn't. It's a very quick read. It's only about 46 pages. It's very simple. It's not brain surgery, okay? It tells you how to avoid the pitfalls of things like brain surgery. But basically, there's some lists in there. Some of the chapters are, well, let me read you the chapters. Do you need a doctor? Define the problem. Short versus long-term issue. Decide what you're willing to do about it. Still undecided? The reality check. The interview. Honesty is still the best policy. Giving it a fair trial. Further tests and referrals. And gold, a doctor you can trust. Now, I haven't fleshed out the appendix yet, and I haven't put references in, basically because, hey, it's my experience. Go get your own references. So at some point, you know, I may actually, you know, think up some references or something. But basically, the whole reason for creating this book is to help people. And so I'm going to read to you from the book, and I don't think I'll get through 45 pages, but, you know, I'll get through parts of it so you have an idea of what it is. And like I said, you can download it for free. And it'll be free for about a month. And then after that, I will probably start taking some pre-orders on it and go to print with it. I'm planning on making it one of those books you can carry around with you in your pocket pretty easily, so that whenever you have to go to a doctor or a hospital, you can take it with you. And you can quick look up a couple things, like what tests are normal for heart disease, what tests are normal for diabetes, you know, that type of stuff. Because what happens when you're ill is everything that you wanted to ask and everything that you're concerned about goes out the window. So you need to start making lists. If you never made a list before in your life, when you're talking about health care and a disease state or an injury that needs fixing, then you better know what you're talking about. And you better have somebody there who's your patient advocate so they don't cut off the wrong leg, you know, and things like that. And I have stories about that kind of stuff in the book, too. But anyway, when you do send somebody to that website, I would ask that instead of copying the PDF and sending it around, what you do is you send each person a link to it and tell them to please sign up and get it themselves for a number of reasons. The major one is I'm not done with this book yet, and so I want to be able to send revisions to people, and I also want to be able to give them a really big discount when I go to print. And so, you know, for instance, if the book is going to sell for $9.95, depending on, you know, what the printing prices are at the time, I might be able to get it for a couple dollars less and, you know, save everybody some money. So that's why I'd like to have their email addresses and things like that. So please do honor that. Other than that, you know, you're welcome to spread it out, spread the information to millions of people, okay? Anybody that you think might need it or might be interested in it. I really want to create some change on the earth in ways that are going to help people. And, you know, face it right now, it's money and it's health. Those are the two main things. And since I'm not an expert in money, except in how to go through it very quickly, let me just hang in with the health, okay? All right, so let me start here. And I'm going to start reading to you the introduction. And again, the book is Choose Your Doctor as If Your Life Depends on It. It does. The things that might seem simple to some are monumentally difficult for others. For years, I've been puzzled at some people's seemingly retarded approach to choosing a physician. For me, the obvious thing has been to go with your gut. When you meet your new doctor, ask yourself if it feels like a good connection. We all have inborn lie detectors, and we actually do know deep inside if the person we have just met is good or bad for us. How many times have we gone through something bad only to say to ourselves, I knew I shouldn't have done that, trusted him, gone there. Our intuition is there to help us avoid painful situations. When we override the intuition, the result can be disastrous. Think of all those situations where one person suddenly refused to board a plane that later crashed. When questioned, the person usually says, I don't know what stopped me. I just didn't feel right about getting on that plane. I bet if you could question the other dead passengers, a good portion of them would admit they had the same feelings but chose not to act on them. I've had the same type of experience related to me by patients who have suffered serious injury by their physicians. In each case, the patient has admitted, I knew I shouldn't have gone through with it, but they were all ready for me, so I had to go. The amazing thing is some of those patients then allowed a second surgery by the same physician that then caused permanent damage and intractable pain. I've listened in shock to such stories, then become aggravated when the patient has gone on to tell me of several other incidents where they had yet again ignored their intuition. I guess some people just need to have the proverbial load of bricks fall on their heads before they'll pay attention. It is my sincere hope that this book may assist people to make better healthcare choices. Even better, perhaps everyone who reads this book will learn to trust their intuition, which will then help them in all areas of life. May you be blessed with the inner knowing. Chapter 1. Do you need a doctor? Good question. How do you know when you need to see a doctor? Are you a hypochondriac who runs to the doctor whenever you feel fearful? Are you a tough guy who thinks he can get out of any situation by deciding to ignore it? Or are you someone who agonizes over whether a visit to the doctor is warranted? Personally, I always consider if I have the time to spend waiting in a crowded office. Then I worry about what the outcome may be. Hospitalization requires even more downtime. Of course, my dilemma is not as difficult as the one you may be facing. Since many of my friends are physicians, I have an in and seldom have to wait very long to be examined. My questions to myself are the same as yours would be. No matter what walk of life you're currently in, the basic question becomes one of need. First, you must determine a few things about yourself. What kind of person are you? How do you react to injuries and illness? On a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being barely reactive and 10 being hysterically reactive, where do you fit in? Neither end of the scale is a good thing. Balance is the key. As in many things in life, moderation is the key. If you barely react, you may die from an undiagnosed condition. My own late husband suffered from the tough guy syndrome, which caused his death. He refused to go to the emergency room after being advised to do so by myself and two other people, a medical psychic and another physician. Although I had found nothing untoward in my examination, his complaints consisted of sniffles and not feeling up to par, I felt that he needed to have tests performed at a hospital. He died the next day of a dissecting aortic aneurysm. It was no comfort to know that I was right. Was I insistent that he go? Absolutely. Did it matter? Not to that 6'4", 320-pound hunk of stubborn butthead. Wife, I feel your pain. On the other hand, I've had both friends and patients who react hysterically to any and all bodily changes as the big one. Note to future patients, I become very irate and unsympathetic if you call me 8 times in one day. Go to counseling and get a grip on yourselves. I subscribe to the school of thought that directs people to be responsible for themselves at all times. Doctors are not gods and do not hold your fate in their hands unless you put it there. You are responsible for everything that happens in your life. Don't ever give over your control to another. There's a relevant saying, those who surrender freedom for security deserve neither. You must be the one to make the ultimate decisions about your life. You are the one living your life, you are the one who must implement changes in your life, and you are the one who will live with the consequences. At this point, I usually hear whining, but what if I make a mistake? And then the hand-wringing and shrieking, how do I know? Get a grip, people. You have a brain, you have intuition, use them. And by the way, life is not for wimps. Life is about meeting challenges and growing, health matters included. So on to the next set of questions. Is your problem something you've had before? Do you have a health issue like diabetes or a heart condition or an immune system disease? Is this something you can handle yourself, or is it something that requires either a phone call or examination by a physician? Is there someone in your circle of family or friends who knows how to handle the situation safely? If your answers are yes, then great. You probably don't need a doctor at that point. When in doubt, always call your physician. You can also call the local urgent care or emergency room triage desk to determine if you're dealing with something serious. Most good physicians will instruct you on what symptoms warrant a visit if you have a chronic condition. My standard instructions to new patients are the following. If you're bleeding profusely in a spurting manner and can't stop the flow, if you have chest pain radiating down arms or legs or neck or back, and nausea, vomiting, dizziness, or confusion, and a feeling of impending doom, if you have a blinding headache that feels as if something will burst, if you have sudden paralysis, inability to speak or think, hello, it's an emergency. Call 911. Although it may seem simple, please reserve the duh comments for a bit. When emergencies occur, people sometimes lose the ability to think clearly due to shock. As an example, here's a story from my home health nursing days. The agency I was working for relayed a message to call a patient's family member. It was approximately 10 minutes since the office manager had received the call and had time to relay it to me. I got off the freeway, pulled over into a parking lot, and returned the call. About 20 minutes had now passed since the original call had come in. An anxious-sounding person answered. It was the patient's 20-something grandson. I asked what the problem was, and, I kid you not, he said, "Grandma's not breathing." Shocked, I asked for clarification. Really not breathing, or just having difficulty not breathing? Not breathing was the answer. At that point, I yelled at the person, "What the heck are you doing calling us? Call 911. Hard to believe, but true. Yes, she had died. Perhaps she could have been saved if the grandson had used some common sense. Common sense in short supply. Chapter 2. Define the problem. Health can be compared to travel. A map is helpful in your journey. Before you can proceed in a logical manner, you must first determine your starting point. Then, you should determine where you want to end up. Given your resources, mood, talents, and abilities, plus any likely interference from friends, family, lifestyle, or work, you can then determine how long it will take to get there and what route might be most suitable. You gather what you need and start off down the road. You may decide to change your direction, rest a little longer than originally planned, or look for more help along the way. In any case, it will oftentimes be a less direct route than you might have envisioned as you planned the journey. There may be accidents along the way. You may or may not recover from those accidents. You may discover things about yourself during the journey that help you to better define your direction. So let's start with the first step, realizing that no matter how long the journey, it always starts with a single step in the chosen direction. This is actually the most important step. How can you know how to plan your journey without knowing where you already are? There are several ways to determine your state of health, and no, feeling energetic is not always a good indication. Physicians usually start with a set of screening tests. If anything's abnormal on those tests, further tests may be indicated before treatment is started. Screening laboratory tests usually include a CBC, complete blood count with differential, chemistry panel, which could be called the BCP, CMP, or an MAC, and urinalysis. Other tests that might be included are the lipid panel, cardiac risk profile, prostate-specific antigen, PSA for men, follicle-stimulating hormone, luteinizing hormone, FSH or LH for women, or hemoglobin A1C for diabetics. Your physician might order other screening tests depending on the underlying chronic conditions. For instance, if you are asthmatic, you would probably get a pulmonary function test, chest x-ray, and possibly a drug level for any prescription drugs with toxic side effects such as theophylline. If you have heart problems, you might also get an electrocardiogram, ECG or EKG, a stress ECG, an echocardiogram, or several other cardiac-specific tests. As a physician, I can tell you that the more data we get, the more precisely we can hone in on the problem. Usually, not always. Step 2, usually concurrent with Step 1, is an in-depth interview and a thorough physical examination known as an H&P, or history and physical. This is what clues your doctor in as to which test to order. In medical terms, this is what is known as the 72-point Western Medical Physical and includes physical examination of the head, eyes, ears, nose, throat, cranial nerves, trunk, heart, lungs, liver, gallbladder, spleen, stomach, intestines, bladder, kidneys, genitals, extremities, arms and legs, skeleton, alignment and function, strength, sensitivity, balance, and movement, and mental-emotional status. If you are not getting the full exam and are being charged for a new patient comprehensive consultation, then you are most likely being ripped off. I call that the 5-minute from the door X-ray vision mind reading consultation. It's shocking how many of my patients have told me they have never had an exam like I gave them, yet they have been quote unquote examined by several specialists and charged upwards of $250 for every first visit to every physician. What is even more appalling is that these physicians have dictated a full H&P as if they have actually done the exam. Please note that some physicians have a nurse perform the exam, but some do not. They just copy what someone else has written. This may not be outright fraud, however. Insurance companies and health organizations may dictate what is considered acceptable as a preliminary exam. But it does explain why so many patients have seemingly incurable conditions. How can a doctor help a patient without appropriate data? There might be other examinations, depending on the types of medicine in which your physician is schooled. Oriental medicine, homeopathy, Ayurveda, osteopathic, chiropractic, naturopathic, and energy medicine are helpful additions. By using additional modalities, I have often surprised my patients with the information they had forgotten to tell me or had excluded, thinking it was unimportant. To a naturopathic physician, everything is important, including what you ate and what it looked like when you were done with it. Did you like how I put that delicately? Step 3 involves your physician's ability to diagnose the problem or lack thereof. Armed with screening tests, history, physical examination, and intuition, your doctor will give it the best guess and proceed accordingly. Now, some physicians may not like me calling it a guess, but that really is what it is. There's a reason it's called the practice of medicine or the art of medicine and not the science of medicine. We are all constantly practicing trying to get better at diagnosis and treatment, and if we are adept, artful, at what we do, then we're successful. Once the diagnosis is determined, we can proceed with treatment. There are often many approaches to treating a medical condition. The more alternative modalities your physician has available, the more individualized your treatment can become. Step 4 involves a discussion with your doc. Test results are discussed, possible plans of treatment are offered, and together a decision or plan is put in place. Each step is delineated along with expected progress and ultimate outcome. Additional education is arranged for any chronic degenerative condition, surgery, or use of appliances, and/or a referral to other health practitioners might be suggested. For instance, if you're a newly diagnosed diabetic, you might be referred to a diabetes education group, a support group, a pharmacist, a nutritionist, or an endocrinologist. If you have a new heart problem, you might be referred to a cardiologist, cardiac rehabilitation center, pharmacist, nutritionist, or support group. Step 5 is where you take a deep breath, enlist family and friends, and walk down the path you have chosen or been forced to take. You will occasionally have to check back with your physician to ensure that you have not taken a problematic side road. If you decide to take a different route, you may need to check in with your doctor to make sure the new treatment will not cause a problem with the original treatment. Many people doctor hop and neglect to inform the new doctor of all the treatments and medications they are currently using or any natural or alternative therapies they have decided to include. Too many people think that just because something is natural, it is safe. Not true. Cyanide and arsenic are natural, but I strongly suggest you should never, ever take them. If your doctor doesn't know if natural supplements will interact with what has been prescribed, then it's up to you to find out. Again, your health is your responsibility. If you don't take your responsibility seriously, well, nature has a way of weeding stupid creatures out of the gene pool. It is called natural selection. If you're now feeling that this health stuff is serious business, good. It is, and your life depends on you paying attention and using common sense. Chapter 3, Short versus Long-Term Issue. Most of the time, we start our health revival with a vague feeling that something just is not quite right. We may experience disturbing dreams. Sometimes the scenario tells us exactly what the problem is. Other times the dream is just the summation of our fears brought on by added stress in our lives. Did you know that even if the stress is from happiness, it is still stress? Whether happy or sad, stress causes a flood of catecholamines to race around in our bodies, creating havoc. These chemical messengers make the heart race, pupils dilate or constrict, make us sweat, increase the rate of breathing, make us cry or scream, and, depending on the stress, make us involuntarily pee or poop. Are you familiar with the term scared poopless? If the stress continues for a long time, it has a negative effect on cortisol levels, which leads to further ailments such as diabetes or chronic pain. In short, a long-term illness by itself can result in chronic stress, which results in increased cortisol levels, which results in more reactivity to stress, which increases cortisol, which, well, you get the picture. Chronically increased cortisol levels have been implicated in neural deterioration, impaired brain function, among other things, and inflammation, discovered in the last few years to be the basis of all disease. So you can see there's a big difference between a long-term and short-term health challenge. As mentioned previously, you might not realize right away that your supposedly short-term issue is turning into a lifelong one. Sometimes the treatments prescribed actually cause other problems. There are plenty of cases where a simple surgery resulted in alleviating the original dysfunction, but then complications from the surgical intervention set in. Adhesions, scar tissue which sticks to other organs and tissues, infections by superbugs from the hospital or careless wound care at home, contractures or atrophy, muscle shortening or wasting caused by prolonged bed rest, bed sores and osteoporosis from prolonged bed rest, depression and psychosis, a sort of cabin fever from being confined, malnutrition and dehydration, and a host of other not-so-pleasant occurrences. First, find out what your health challenge is. Then, find out what the normal course of the disease is, as well as what complications might be anticipated. Plan your life accordingly so as to not be caught unaware if your health slides downhill further. Then investigate what other alternatives there are that might help. Too often I've had patients come to me after the conventional medical system has drained them dry of finances and left them uninsurable due to the diagnosis. I suggest that you have your insurance plan in effect and keep it in effect. The standard practice is to refuse to insure anyone for pre-existing conditions. Depending on what the diagnosis is, that designation on your records can leave you uninsurable. There are many physicians who have great sympathy and compassion for those who can no longer afford medical care. Most of us treat a percentage of our patients for free. However, we live in an economy that is run on money. We can only do so much of that before we're out of business. The common misconception is that doctors make so much money that we can afford to give treatments for free. I wonder how many people who think that give their company hours of work for free. I've actually had people come to see me and blatantly ask me to treat them without charge. When asked what they're willing to do for me in return, I hear nothing. For those who are unaware, the government does not subsidize naturopathic medical care. In such a case, I remind them, you get what you pay for. In this case, nothing. Which brings me to another important point. Everything we do in life is energy. Money is a form of energy given as a means of appreciation for goods or services. Barter systems allow for other forms of exchange, service for service, goods for service, etc. Trying to get all you can from someone without proper exchange is an attitude of fear. Fear of the lack of resources can actually cause illness. I've seen it happen many times. If you have a short-term illness like a cold or flu, or an injury that heals within a few months, you likely won't give a whole lot of thought to the process. You may feel frustrated and inconvenienced, but usually figure that the cause is out there and has little to do with you. I'm here to tell you it has a lot to do with you and your stinking thinking. If you would like to learn how thinking affects health, start with Louise Hay's books, then check the internet for news on neuropsychoimmunology, holographic memory resolution, and neural reprogramming. Our thoughts and emotions have direct effect on our health through the limbic system. The limbic system is our emotional connection with memories. When you hear a certain song that brings back memories and feelings, that's your limbic system at work. Most of the time, we have no clue that all that info is in there or is affecting health changes. Let me give you a few somewhat strange personal examples. Whenever I wanted to stay home from school, I remembered how I felt, both physically and emotionally, when I was really sick. In no time, I had a fever of 103 degrees Fahrenheit. After Mom took my temperature and decided I should stay home, I'd happily snuggle down in my blankets without a fever to finish the book I was reading. I used to love to watch sci-fi and horror movies. I was a rabid Twilight Zone and Outer Limits fan and moved on to everything Stephen King wrote. It was my custom to eat while reading or watching movies. Many years later, while undergoing a fasting cleanse for a week, I actually had hallucinations as layers of toxins came out of my body. I saw horrifying creatures from the movie superimposed over real life. Wow, was that ever a wake-up call? That made me more careful of how I ate. Recalling an accident that I was almost involved in that would have caused about 50-plus cars to pile up, I felt again the sick fear, broke out in a sweat, started shaking, and almost fainted. In that almost accident, if I hadn't had quick reflexes, I would have been the first car wiped off the road by a huge tractor trailer carrying an earth mover. My car would have tumbled end over end after being swatted by the careening flatbed trailer, and it missed me by more than an inch. It left such a trauma in my memory that psychics picked it up as something that had actually happened. Lest you doubt the power of the mind and emotions, read up on Norman Vincent Peale, laughter medicine, hypnosis, Napoleon Hill, and multitudes of others. If you think your mind and emotions have nothing to do with your health, think again. I had a friend who smoked 4 packs of cigarettes daily for over 30 years, who was diagnosed with malignant melanoma and told it had metastasized, moved to other areas, which is a very bad thing. His doctor told him to get his affairs in order. He had between 2 and 4 weeks to live. He fired his doctor, went home, and did alternative therapies. He watched as much comedy as possible. He refused to admit that he had cancer or to allow anyone else to say he did. He went ahead with more biopsies a few weeks later. He had to, since the doctor had ordered it, and he would have lost his insurance if he refused. After examining 20-some lymph nodes, which all had the outward appearance of cancer, they were unable to find a single cancer cell anywhere. He was still alive and kicking and doing very well when I saw him some 20 years later. The point of all this, and what I have been slowly working up to, is this. If you have a long-term health challenge, it will make a huge difference in the outcome if you decide that you have every chance in the world of living a healthy, vital life. If every thought you have is not concentrated on the aspect of illness, but rather on health, you have a much better chance of being healthier. For sure, you will be happier not dwelling on fearsome issues. This does not mean that you should abandon recommended health care, however. If you're wondering how to decide to not think negatively, there are many effective methods you can learn to turn your thinking around. If you're depressed, did you know that it's practically impossible to be depressed when you're looking up? Really? This is one of those little factoids gleaned from research into eye movements and emotions. Another method to get yourself away from worrying about yourself is to go help someone who's in worse shape than you. Most hospitals, clinics, and rest homes have volunteer programs that would gladly accept your help. A few hours of helping those less fortunate makes you glad to be who you are, even with your own set of challenges. No matter how bad we think our problems are, they're still our problems. We know them thoroughly and are prepared to deal with them. I've never met anyone who would truly be willing to exchange their problems for someone else's, even though many joke about wanting to do so. The truth is, we are uniquely prepared to deal with those circumstances we find ourselves in. Many spiritual teachers will tell you the problems were all arranged before you took up residence in your body as tools to bring out your inner self. Now, before you yell, "No way did I choose this pack of problems," think about what you've learned while dealing with challenges. Perhaps you will be surprised at the strengths and the love you have gathered along the way. If not, perhaps you have not gotten far enough along the path yet to notice. Or perhaps you're a closet drama queen and are enjoying all the hoopla surrounding you. Either way, it's okay. It's your path. For those who still suffer in anger and seethe with bitterness over their current circumstances, there's yet another thing to consider. Perhaps the anger is there to teach you to forgive. Usually people will not change until they are so uncomfortable with where they are that they just can't stand it anymore. When you start to realize how anger hurts you and makes most things worse, you're ready to change. If you refuse to change, anger will get you, as will resentment. A good example is MS, multiple sclerosis. I have seen thousands of people with MS. In every case, the underlying emotion is unresolved anger, usually turned inward. Many MS patients are described as a saint, the sweetest person you could ever hope to meet. Sometimes the MS patient is aware of their anger. Many times I've confronted patients with their deep anger, and many times they have admitted that they are not ready to give up their anger yet. Many times they're punishing themselves, but sometimes they are also punishing people around them. Until they are ready to forgive both themselves and others, a cure will elude them. In the case of cancer, deep-seated resentment coupled with fury is usually found. Again, when confronted, many cancer patients refuse to let go of their resentments. It doesn't take to pop out of normal cells when resentment is being harbored. I myself grew a basal cell carcinoma as plain as the nose on my face. It was on my nose. During my last year of medical school, I was at the height of my resentment and physically exhausted. I had too many problems to deal with, both physical and financial, and just felt like I didn't want to deal with anything anymore. Now, I would never commit suicide. I'm not that type. When I realized that sore wouldn't heal and was getting a rolled base in a central crater, I had an interesting talk with myself. I had to laugh, seeing as how that abnormality popped up where I had to notice it. After all, if it had been on my backside, it would never have known. So I sat myself down, had a serious look inside, and noticed that I had not had any fun in quite some time. Resentment had piled up on resentment. Next, I developed a precancerous condition on my cheeks. You should see my graduation picture. I look like somebody beat me up. What a lesson. Lest you think I have any more resentment about that particular time of my life, let me tell you, it took quite a few years to get over it all the way. The first few years, I started trembling and feeling nauseated every time I had to go back to my school for a seminar. You see, resentment is deep. It takes a lot of work to get rid of it because it took a long time to build up to a point that it was noticed. Thank God for that skin cancer. What kind of cancer was I able to avoid because I dealt with the problem right away? My point is, not every illness is a curse. Many are blessings in disguise. Sometimes a long-term illness exists just because we refuse to work on the associated problem in our lives. And some people never get it. Other people experience miracles. Which would you rather be? Chapter 4, Decide What You're Willing to Do About It. Once you have decided that you indeed have a health concern that needs to be addressed, the often overlooked part is that of thinking about just how far you're willing to go in your pursuit of good health. In order to make an informed decision, you first need a diagnosis. With a proper diagnosis, you can make your plan for the journey. First, you need to know where you are, then you can find the best path. Make sure you discover all the options available to you, which includes all possible side effects. Ask not only your doctor, but also other doctors as necessary. The more serious the diagnosis, the more important second and third opinions are. Usually the first thing the patient wants to know is if the diagnosis is serious. Is it bad, doc? If the answer is yes, then you have a lot of work to do very quickly. If the answer is no, that does not mean that you can ignore it. If you have more time to change your health status, use that time to your best advantage. If your doctor says you need a lifestyle and diet change, ask what needs to be changed and why. When the reason is given, and it makes sense, it is that much easier to make the changes. Sometimes the doctor does not give you a suitable answer. In that case, go find someone that can explain it better. It is your responsibility to get all the facts. Suppose your diagnosis is one of a degenerative condition, such as hypertension, diabetes, arthritis, cardiac disease, emphysema, etc. Any such conditions will require some fairly intense lifestyle changes. What are you willing to do in such a circumstance? If your first thought is that you can escape problems and continue living as you have in the past, I must point out the popular definition of insanity, continuing to do what you have always done, expecting different results. Instead of thinking of your diagnosis as a terrible imposition on your lifestyle, realize that it really is a wake-up call from your body. When I have to tell a patient a diagnosis requiring a lifestyle change, I often hear, "Hell, doc, my grandpa drank a fifth of Jack Daniels every day, plus smoked 5 cigars and ate nothing but fat back and beans, and he lived to be 95. This is the point where I mention a study done in Sweden some 30 or so years ago. It was estimated that only one in every 86,000 people has a constitution that allows them to abuse the body and get away with it. I then state that I myself am not one of those blessed with such a great constitution, and ask the patient if they think they have such a blessing. And so far as Grandpa's abuses, might he not have lived to be well over 100 if he did not engage in such detrimental behaviors? Consider also that in our grandparents' era, food was all organic, water was pure and unadulterated, and the environment was not nearly as polluted as in present times. It's said that we're in contact with over 3,000 chemicals every day, and the number is increasing, not decreasing. Add to that the increasing number of inborn errors of metabolism, which involve the enzymatic pathways in the liver resulting in the inability to get rid of toxins, and you have several reasons why most of us do not have strong enough constitutions to get away with the type of abuse that our grandparents could. So make your decision and take action. Plot a course and stick to it. A journey of 1,000 miles starts with a single step. There is no try. There is only do or do not. Thank you, Yoda. Get her done. Thank you, Larry the Cable Guy. Does any of this sound familiar? Pick whatever suits you and get to it. Personally, I have no patience at all for those people who constantly complain about their lot in life but do nothing to improve it. The anxiety-ridden need to go find someone else who will listen to their fears. I'm just not interested. Furthermore, those who are anxious are usually the least inclined to get help. They're a form of energy vampire. They throw their fears out at you and reel in the sympathy. Yuck! Now, before the anxiety-prone all flock to send me hate mail, let me point out that I am referring to the drama queens, the ones who, figuratively and sometimes literally, grab onto your lapels and shriek the poor me song. You know the kind, those who think nothing of crossing other people's boundaries to get what they want, now. Fear is something that needs to be controlled. Those who refuse to conquer their fears are the ones I'm referring to. We all have lots of challenges in life, but eventually we all have all the same challenges. If you look beneath most negative behavior, you will find fear. For instance, angry people are afraid they are being attacked. The fear of attack is basic, DNA-based, you might say. Look at our sympathetic, part of the autonomic, nervous system, built for fight or flight. When the angry person learns to trust that he or she is safe, the anger goes away like magic. I myself had a huge problem with anger. Try as I might, I just couldn't seem to conquer it. In frustration one day, I asked one of my teachers when it might be expected to go away. The answer, "It will serve you until it doesn't," gave me no help. Huh? I had absolutely no idea what that meant. Now I do, but at that time I was clueless. It is very true that your anger will serve you until it doesn't, which usually means until you no longer need it. Anger is there to help us move through our challenges. It provides energy so we can move through the process. It is well known in mental health circles that the most dangerous time for a suicidal person is when they're angry, because then they have enough energy to commit the deed. The question is, will your anger fuel your search for health or hinder it? In other words, are you trying to live or die? Look deep inside and determine which path you are really on. That deep inside gaze is sometimes shocking. Please be honest with yourself at least and determine what you really want. The wake-up call came for me about a year after my husband had died. After a year of being forced to do things I wanted no part of but had to deal with, things I was unprepared to deal with, I had a problem. Of course, I could have just said forget about it at the risk of losing everything. As I searched deep within myself, I discovered at the core I was unhappy. Wow, what a shock. I knew I was feeling something I had never dealt with before. Even worse, my health was on a downward slide to the state of constant unhappiness I was in. I decided that I did want to live and that I would be through with all the unpleasantness soon. In spite of that, I ended up in ICU with life-threatening blood clots in my lungs about 5 months later. The funny part was that everyone around me kept telling me I had to live and it wasn't my time to go. They kept it up until I was getting irritated and wondering why everyone kept telling me such things. After all, I had decided that I did indeed want to stay on the planet and finish my mission. But the events I had set in place during my unhappy time had to play out. I imagine it's kind of like trying to get a train to reverse direction at full speed. At any rate, I survived and confused the heck out of a few doctors in the process. On top of reversing the direction, I had to commit to taking better care of myself, and I had to do it immediately. Take care of me. What a giant pain in the you-know-what. Please, people, be smart about your health and honest with yourselves. And when you make a commitment to change, do it wholeheartedly. Chapter 5. Still undecided? What if you're still unable to make a decision? If you have been presented with the facts and the information is verifiable and you still cannot decide, then you might want to consider what might be holding you back. If you meditate, this becomes easy. Go inside yourself, ask the right questions, and you will get the answers you need. If you don't meditate, it becomes a little more difficult. This chapter is for those who still do not know which way to turn. The first step toward resolution is to examine the underlying cause of your indecision. The most common cause is fear. Sometimes you might be paralyzed by the diagnosis and the implication of lifelong disease or imminent death. When your mortality rises up and looks you in the eye, it is natural to feel frozen in fear. On the other hand, such a moment may give you the most clarity you have ever had. Many people have told me that facing death by flying bullets and bombs was amazing. Everything around them slowed down and they became calm. During this time, they noted that everything in their life became clear and fear vanished. Other people have related that they were literally frozen by fear, unable to move or speak or even think. Why can some people react instantly and others cannot? Most of us have no idea how we would react when facing death. It is said that heroes are made in dangerous circumstances. Perhaps it is that some people are equipped with different responses from birth due to genetics and nervous system development. Perhaps it is that some are challenged by life continuously and learn to be courageous. While I do not know the answer to that, I do know that we have a difficult time controlling how we respond to extreme danger, but that it can and is done by lots of people. Having said that, let me now announce, it is not your fault if you respond to fear with that frozen deer-in-the-headlights look. The good news, you can learn to control it. The trick is to continue on in spite of fear. The true definition of courage is not that one is fearless, but rather that one acts in spite of it. A certain amount of shock is expected when given a negative diagnosis. Every doctor knows this, and most try to be sure you have someone to comfort you before delivering difficult news to you. Sometimes doctors are so saddened by the news that must be delivered they are incapable of comforting the patient or making sure they're taken care of by a loved one. I have seen many usually compassionate doctors become dispassionate idiots at times when delivering a terminal diagnosis. Further shocks of cold behavior or harsh treatment can make it much more difficult to deal with your problem. In any case, you must take care of you. When paralyzed by fear, ask someone close to you to help make decisions. If you have no one, there are many patient advocates available to help you. Sometimes just admitting to someone that you're feeling overwhelmed is enough to jar you out of the paralysis. Perhaps you are unable to make a decision because you have no money. No one should ever have to make a health decision based on finances, but it happens all the time. I've had two women with breast cancer make their decisions based on money. One died despite my attempts to get her to a surgeon and telling her that hospitals and doctors are available to those with little or no money. She came to my office and denied she had any problems, just stating she wanted to lose weight. Her roommate, my patient, had felt there was something drastically wrong with her health and asked me to check her out. During the exam, I discovered that her left breast was twice the size of the right and had orange peel dimpling and big ugly veins all over it. I insisted she go to a surgeon immediately. The woman said she wasn't eligible for care because she made too much money for state assistance, but not enough to buy health insurance. I explained that even if she had to pay the surgeon $10 a week for the rest of her life, she needed to go immediately, since she had all the appearances of breast cancer. She promised she would go get evaluated, but never did. A few months later, my patient, her roommate, came in for a checkup and said, "She says she's doing the diet just as you told her and doing well." Well, my eyes bugged out and the pit of my stomach loosed a flock of butterflies. What diet? I didn't tell her anything about a diet. I had called the woman twice after her visit, and she told me she had seen a surgeon and was scheduled for surgery. Yes, patients do lie to doctors. I put my eyes back in my head, got the butterflies to settle back down, and called the woman. I did my best to convince her to go to a surgeon immediately. My patient called the ambulance for her a few weeks later when the breast burst as she was standing at the bathroom sink. It filled the bowl. She was admitted to the hospital, went through chemotherapy, and died anyway. What a waste. The other woman with breast cancer had decided she was going to pray it away. I called her and found out she wasn't pursuing treatments because the family was burdened financially. Now, I'm a great believer in prayer, and I've seen many miracles in my life. However, I believe that God helps those who help themselves. I don't know whatever happened to that woman, but I do hope that prayer helped. Whenever I think about her, I'm reminded of the joke about the blonde widow with two kids who was a very pious churchgoer. They lived in poverty, and every day she prayed to God that she would win the lottery. First she lost the house, then the car, and they were finally penniless and homeless, wandering the streets and living in an alleyway. God, she prayed, sobbing, I've been a good girl. I've always done everything you asked of me. Why won't you let me win the lottery? A voice responded from heaven above, Brandy, work with me here. Buy a ticket. Take the first step. Buy your ticket. For those who feel they're lacking the smarts to make the right decision, enlist the help of friends and family and a patient advocate. By the way, nurses are patient advocates. If you had any idea of how many lives nurses have saved by being the advocate, you would be shocked. Of course, it is important to have an advocate that is not only competent, but also caring. Most nurses fit the bill, but not all. Just like shopping for a doctor, you need to shop for a patient advocate. Find someone you resonate with, nurse, pastor, social worker, volunteer. Now, for those who are still wringing their hands and declaring they just cannot decide and have no idea how to meditate or even if it is safe to meditate, please allow me to explain a few things. Meditation is always good. There is no evil attached to it. Meditation is simply a part of your conversation with God, Source, Divine Creator, Yahweh, G-D, Heavenly Father, Father, Mother, whatever. Don't get hung up on the semantics. God doesn't care what you call it. It only cares that you call it. There are three parts to that conversation with God. Hey, how you doing? It's me again. This is what I need. Please help me. Tell me what to do. And thanks a lot. I love you. Prayer is when you talk to God. Meditation is when you listen for the answer. In order to listen, you must first be still. This is where most people have a problem shutting off the monkey mind. Beginning practitioners of meditation often find they cannot maintain the silence and the mind is filled with insistent thoughts. There are several ways you can get into the stillness. I will outline the most simple here. Entering the stillness meditation. First, get comfortable, but not too comfortable. We don't want you falling asleep. Close your eyes and take three deep, slow breaths in and out. Clear your mind of thought and start to notice your breathing in. Out, in, out. Start to listen to every noise around you without making a judgment about it. In other words, don't name things like, oh, the air conditioner just turned on, or dang, the next door neighbor is mowing his lawn just as I'm trying to meditate. Just listen to the noise. Hear the air blowing or the lawnmower engine, but have no thought about it. When a thought comes floating across, just push it aside. Tell your monkey mind thanks for sharing and immediately go back to listening. When you have sat in silence long enough and are done, bring your consciousness back to the room, allow thought back in, take a deep, quick breath, and open your eyes. At first, you may only be able to maintain silence for a split second. Do not put yourself down or worry about it. You will be able to enter the silence by practicing it over and over. Soon, you will maintain silence for a few seconds, then a minute or two, then 5 minutes, and so on. When you're able to maintain mind silence for at least a few minutes and you're ready to ask your question, just ask. Streamline your question carefully before you enter the silence, then listen. One of the programs I find very easy for people to learn meditation through is that of the Silva Mind Control Method, which is a problem-solving meditation. The great thing about Silva's method is you can do it when you lay down to sleep and allow your non-conscious mind to come up with the answers for you while you sleep. There's a contact number in the appendix if you're interested in obtaining the program. I learned the method when I was 24 years old and used it every night to work everything out for me. As a result, I was able to accomplish about 5 times more stuff than other people and was fully rested and relaxed. When I was about 26, I was so accustomed to getting more done that I routinely worked full-time, rode my horse for hours after work, endurance riding, read at least 2 new books and several magazines a week, did craft work, solved friends' problems, and worked out at least 3 hours a day. One day, while relating things I had done to a guy around my age, he yelled, "You're a liar! You couldn't possibly have done all those things by your age. That's impossible!" I was understandably surprised at why he would think such a thing. It could only respond with, "Obviously not, since I've done it all." He was quite upset. It blew his mind to think that a person was capable of so much. Translation, that he had done so little in his years. I did have another advantage on him, though. I'm adventurous, curious, and hardworking. Those qualities naturally lead one to do more things in life. Another great technique is that of dream induction. This is one of those quick answer methods, but you have to be very careful how you phrase your question, since the non-conscious mind will answer exactly what you ask. Spend some time wording your question carefully so no misunderstandings occur. Your non-conscious mind just wants to help you and will do the best it can. I had a funny experience with that when I felt a really strange energy coming out of my closet, creepy and powerful. All my intuitive friends felt it as soon as they came to the front door. Some said they would not come over until I got rid of it. I was perplexed. The dream induction technique just happened to be part of my curriculum at the time. Thank you, Phoenix ARE Clinic. Dream induction. Prepare your question carefully. Make it short and very concise. Put the question nearby as you go to bed. If you wake up during the night, read the question again as you go back to sleep. Make sure you have a notepad and pen or a tape recorder handy. Call on your subconscious mind saying, "Subconscious mind, listen up. Get me the correct answer to my question and bring it to my conscious mind when I wake up. This is an order." At which point, your non-conscious mind says, "Yes, boss," and salutes you. Well, mine does anyway. Ask the question, like giving an order, 3 times. And keep thinking of the question as you drift into the twilight sleep. First thing in the morning, as soon as you are conscious, think of your question and remember the answer you were given. It might take more than one night or not. My own experience took a few nights. I had not framed my question to get the right answer. I had asked, "What is in my closet?" My answer was a picture of the closet and its contents. When I finally formulated the correct question, "What do I need to do about what is in my closet that feels creepy?" I got an answer that shocked and scared me. I had to go sit in the closet in front of a spirit mirror with the lights off and be prepared for anything. Hoo boy! I gritted my teeth and prepared to do it. My friends thought I was taking too many chances and that it was spiritually dangerous. I just figured that my non-conscious mind had a vested interest in my survival, so it would be okay. So, quaking in my boots, I sat down in front of the mirror in the dark with the creepiness and asked for answers. What came shocked me to the core, and I sobbed uncontrollably. It still makes me sad even now. The creepy feeling was my energy that had left during a near-death experience a year before. I was being poisoned with carbon monoxide every night for 3 months. I was hanging on by a thread by the time I realized what was happening. The wood-burning fireplaces in my luxury apartment were venting gases into my attic, no one knows why it happened, and coming down my attic access when I was asleep. During that time, I had several moments of panic and my mind telling me not to go into the closet. My mind screamed that my life was in danger and that someone was poisoning me with carbon monoxide. I told my mind to shut up. Such a thing was ridiculous, and why would anyone do such a thing to me? I had no fear. In fact, I had worked very hard over many years to rid myself of all fear during my shamanic training. It turns out that my mind was right, and ignoring it almost killed me. I still suffer from the effects of that poisoning. Where the intense feeling that inhabited my closet came from was my cellular memory of that terrible time, triggered because my new apartment had an access panel in my closet. The feeling was of horror and terrible loneliness because so many millions of my cells died and I was not present with them. I was shown that to our cells, we are God. Our cells only want to love us and serve us. Our cells look to our divine intelligence to keep them safe and to love them in return. My cells died without me. When the realization of this hit me, I grieved for my cells tremendously. I asked for forgiveness, as each cell, indeed each molecule in our universe, is alive and carries the divine spark within it. That experience was so profound that I still cry every time I remember it. The good news is the creepy feeling left immediately, but I threw out the spirit mirror anyway just in case. If you think this is all mumbo-jumbo nonsense, you might want to stop reading here. It just gets worse. For those who are in contact with the source of all life, you know the truth of what I am relating. The dream induction method is a quite powerful tool if you are willing to take the time to frame your question correctly and to go with the flow. Then it's your choice as to how you will proceed. Just be honest with yourself, admit your fears, and do what is best for you. Okay, we're about halfway through the book. I will continue and read the other half of it next week. And you are certainly welcome to go to the website and download the book. All you have to do is sign up. Just click on the tab that says Join the List. And you can go ahead and put in your email, your first name and your email, and do the double opt-in, you know, respond when it says, are you the person that asked for this? And then you can just download right from there. It's in PDF format. And you're welcome to it. And I would ask that you would please encourage your friends and family and acquaintances to go to the site and do just like I've asked you to do. And again, don't pass the PDF on just, you know, emailing it to somebody. Please have them go and sign up, because I, you know, really don't want incomplete copies out there. And so I, you know, I do have some revisions to do yet, but I wanted to get out there immediately with it, because I think people really need this. They need to understand how to go about their health care, you know, and how to go on and do something that's going to help them. So I hope that you have enjoyed that. I hope that it has helped a lot, or will help you in your search for better health. In the back half of the book, which we'll get to next week, I have some checklist things that you ask your doctor. It's very important to interview your doctor. And I'm going to say something now that I reiterate in the book several times, but I want you to really get it. When you go to a doctor, you are paying them. They are not doing you a favor, okay? Unless you're one of those people that went in and asked for free care. But, you know, you go to a doctor, you got to pay them some way or the other. You know, if you're in a community on top of the mountain, you better be bringing that doctor a chicken or something, you know. And, hey, chicken would be good. That'd be okay, too. But basically, it's a form of anything, you know, that we do on the planet. Some of us are better at some things than others. Or if you look at a lot of metaphysical things, we teach what we most need to learn. So apparently I need to learn a lot about health, because I teach it a lot. So hopefully what I've learned will help everybody. And boy, that hour went by quick. So if you have any questions or any comments, there is a feedback form on that website. Again, the website is www.free800.us/choose-your-doctor-home. Again, that's free, F-R-E-E, 800-800.us, as in United States, /choose-your-doctor-home, C-H-O-O-S-E-Y-O-U-R-D-O-C-T-O-R-H-O-M-E. And I also wrote that in the show information portion. So you can click on that, you know, where it says info in front of Enlightened Medicine Show in the schedule. And it's written on there, too. So enjoy. Drop me a line. Let me know how you like it. And if you have any great anecdotal stories, things that you might have used that book with, that it's helped with, I would love those. I love getting testimonials. And for those of you that are in the L.A. area, I'm going to be in L.A. on the 17th through about the 24th, doing the Quantum Vortex experience. So if you would like to slide in and get into one of the times that we're doing that, you can give me a call or drop me a line. And you can drop me a line on the book website or send me a message at dr.valerienmd@gmail.com. That's dr.valerienmd, as in naturopathic medical doctor, @gmail.com, or give me a call. And my 800 number is there on the site, 888-977-5898. Again, that number is 888-977-5898. And until next week, be happy, be healthy, and be who you really are. And please go check out hydramae.com, hydramae.com. Thanks. Nighty night.
Rise to a new day with each your soul to keep.